Welcome to the Health and Human Services Finance Committee. We do have a quorum. Today we are going to be doing a walkthrough of the finance omnibus bill. And what we thought we would do is first begin with Mr. Berg going through the spreadsheet, just the relevant sections of the spreadsheet. And then questions, and then on spreadsheet issues, and then we'll just probably just walk through the different sections of the bill for our walkthrough this afternoon. So, Mr. Berg, if you want to just kick us off on the spreadsheet, please.
All right, Mr. Chair, I would start on page 3 of the spreadsheet, which is where the proposals start. Just to orient members, the right-hand 6 columns are the House items in the DE amendment. The others are the governor's items. Starting at line 90, we have an item where we remove $3.2 million in basic sliding fee underspending. Line 96 is Representative Mack's community emergency technician bill. Line 101 on page 4 is Representative Norton's child support working group. Just below that on an unnumbered line is the Eagle's Nest GRH administrative money, Representative Anderson P's house file. On line 105, we have Representative Cresha's child protection bill. On line 111, we have Representative Mack's public assistance simplification bill. Line 119 is Representative Peterson's safe place for newborns. Line 123 is Representative Lohmer's automated drug dispensing bill. Line 128 on the top of page 5 is where we do a TANF refinancing to save some money on the general fund and replace it with TANF funds. There's an item connected to that in the health department that I'll get to. Line 134 represents an administrative reduction to the central office of DHS. There's a similar reduction at the MDH.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, just want to know how you would like to have the meeting proceed. Would you like to just have Mr. Berg, you know, kind of line through all those and then take questions later? Would you like to take questions as we get to certain pages on the bill? We're particularly interested in hearing about things that weren't discussed in committee. You know, we know you have to do that to meet targets, but we just want to make sure we understand them. So how would you like to have us proceed?
You know, I thought what we could do is just march through the spreadsheet and then maybe do questions on the spreadsheet and then go through the sections and then questions on the sections.
Fine. Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members, then on line 143 on page 5, we have an item where we remove forecast inflation on managed care contracts from the forecast. Line 149, we have an item that directs there's language in the bill that directs the commissioner to negotiate managed care contracts in order to save administrative costs. Line 153, we have an item that reflects cost savings from statewide competitive bidding of managed care contracts. Line 157 on the top of page 6 removes the funding for the OLA audit that we heard earlier this year. It takes it out in each of the biennia. Coming up, there is a later different audit item that is funded. This just removes the money that was to go to the auditor for the one that won't be done. Line 163 is a managed care payment delay. This is identical to an item that was done in 2011 to roll a month's worth of payments of managed care contracts out of the biennium. On line 167, we have the chairman's House File 1664 dealing with MNsure. There's not money in here, but there's language directing a commissioner to deal with, to request the change in federal grant purpose. Line 171 is the Minnesota CARE repeal. Most members know, it's been noted a lot today, that the fiscal note had problems with it, and this is the corrected set of numbers, starting on the very last line on page 6. And moving into the top of page 7 is an item where we are receiving some fiscal 15 appropriations to help with our budget. I don't know, Mr. Chairman, that's a little more complicated item that maybe I won't describe it now, but that it deals with getting 15 money into our target to help our committee. Line 194 on page 7 is appropriating surplus funds in the Healthcare Access Fund to direct MA payments and reducing general fund costs accordingly. Line 200 is the public programs verification audit item, Representative Pearson's at Pearson and Druskowski's bills. Line 209 is Representative Zerwas's durable medical equipment bill, 1053. Line 216 is Representative Hamilton's State Quality Council bill. On page 8, on line 224, is Representative Mack's telemedicine bill. On page 233 is a portion of Representative Peterson's TEFRA parental fees. This represents a reduction of 10% of the parental fees. Not the bill actually got rid of them entirely, but this is 10%. Line 237 represents a one-time increase to ICFDD rates from Representative Hamilton's bill, House File 654. The top of page 9 is Representative Schumacher's nursing reform payment bill, House File 316. And the next item on line 261 is connected to that, is the healthcare workforce item. This is part of Representative Backer's bill, House File 614. And there is another part of this that the health department will come to. This is the nursing facility scholarships portion. There's additional in the health department section. Line 265 is from Representative Zerwas's House File 1155. This has an approximation for a 5% increase in rates. We do need some further clarification from DHS on the cost of that, but the intention is a 5% increase, and the language in the article, I believe, reflects that. Line 269 is Representative Albright's bill on MAEPD premium payments. Line 276 is Representative Baker's bill on Gillette hospital rates. Top of page 10 is Representative Dean's bill, House File 2140, on a pharmacy price comparison website. Line 285 is Representative Zerwas's bill, 559. This represents a change of the spend down percentage from 75% to 80% starting in 2017. Line 289 is a savings in 16-17 and a cost in 18-19 from the North Star foster care program becoming a forecasted program. DHS brought this to us. There was some error that this didn't get picked up in the February forecast, and they brought it forward and said that this program will actually save $7.4 million in 16-17 and cost a little bit in 18-19. Line 293 is part of Representative Backer's bill on services and supports for first episode psychosis. 299 is part of Representative Albright's bill on mental health crisis services, House File 1062. Line 306 is Representative Keel's bill on dementia grants and Alzheimer's. Top of page 11 is on line 312 is part of Representative Backer's bill on House File 1063, which is clubhouse services and first episode items. Line 319 is Representative Pearson's bill on deaf and hard of hearing. 323 is Representative Dean's bill on children chemical dependency prevention grants dealing with schools. Line 327 is Representative Hancock's bill on the Beltrami County Mental Health Center. Line 331 is Representative Backer's bill on psychiatric residential treatment facilities. Page 12 is Representative Zerwas's bill on chemical dependency provider rates. This represents a 2.5% increase in rates. The bill actually had 10, but this is a 2.5% increase. Line 349 is the Hunger Solutions Mobile Food Shelf from Representative Smith's bill. Line 353 is Representative Hoppe's civil commitment changes. We come to a number of governor's items that we are not doing, so I will skip to the next House item is on page 16, line 474, where we are doing the governor's respite care expansion item. Then we move to page 20, where we are requiring that the Fergus Falls facility, members will remember there was discussion of whether there is or isn't a 20-year lease, and that DHS knew about that in there. This requires that facility to not be closed prior to July 1st of 2019. I believe there's still some discussion going on as to what will happen with that facility. Jumping to page 23. We have a couple of more governor's items that were picked up on line 643, federal compliance on documenting runaway and sex trafficked youth. Line 653, Minnesota Care Federal Basic Health Program compliance, which we need to do. There on line 657 is health care federal compliance items. Moving to page 24, we have a governor's item we picked up on called Strengthening Recovery Act Contract Effectiveness. This has to do with MA fraud recovery. The governor's background studies item, which is a no-cost item. Moving to page 25, we picked up the governor's medication management therapy program updates, and online 702 and down, we had the expansion of the Minnesota Restricted Recipient Program. On line 709, inpatient hospital payment changes, is there critical access hospitals? This is also Representative Backer's House File 1853. Line 715 is an item improving third-party liability recoveries. This is helping DHS look for third-party payers. On the top of page 26, well, no, actually, that's an item from the prior page. So moving on to page 27, we have on line 750, funding for the Homeless Youth Act. That was also in Representative Will's House File 581. Next is the Safe Harbor for Sexually Exploited Youth, Representative Miller's House File 1061. On line 764, we have the governor and Representative Zerwas's item on ABLE accounts. Jumping to page 28, we have, as I mentioned earlier, Representative Bean has House File 2038 that sets up managed care auditing functions. This part mirrors the governor's funding. There is a small additional piece at the health department that I'll come to in just a minute. Moving on, that's the end of the DHS items. Starting on page 30 with the health department, line 2066 is the other portion of Representative Miller's Safe Harbor for Sexually Exploited Youth, the outreach portion. Line 2070 is Representative Schumacher's House File 971 on advanced care planning. Line 2074 is Representative Hoppe's poison control funding bill. Line 2078 is Representative Zerwas's stroke system bill. On page 31, starting at the top, is on line 2082, is a 15% reduction to the department's administrative program. Below that, on line 2086, is Representative Purcell's ambulance service bill. On line 2090 is Representative Franson's organ donation bill. On line 2094 is Representative Grunhagen's bill for Isaroon. On line 2098 is Representative Zerwas's bill on the Smile Healthy Grant Program. Line 2102 is Representative McDonald's bill 576 for FQHC funding. On line 2106 is the other portion I mentioned of Representative Dean's 2038. There's a small cost of $40,000 at the health department for a portion of the auditing that they're involved in. Line 2110 at the bottom is just the title, and going on to the next page of Representative Baker's opiate antagonist bill. On page 32, on line 2114, is Representative Barrett's suicide prevention bill. The unlabeled line there is a new item which has some money in to increase the MERC program, which is for medical education costs. Line 2118 is where the SHIP program is defunded. Line 2122 is the other part I mentioned of the TANF item earlier in the spreadsheet. This defunds the visiting home nurse program that is funded by TANF. And as I mentioned earlier, then that money goes to increase the TANF portion of the MFIP cash grant line and reduce the general fund portion of that. There's no change in the actual cash grant itself. Line 2146 is the other portion of the healthcare workforce items. This represents parts of Representative Backer's House File 614 and Representative Keel's House File 1447. It funds, I see the labels don't say it, but it funds three different items, which are HCBS scholarships, loan forgiveness, and residencies are what those three lines are. I'll correct that.
Repeat the line.
That is line 2126, healthcare workforce. And I will correct the lines to show that there are three separate programs there. Line 2132 is Representative Pearson's bill 1960 on lodging establishment definition. Jumping ahead to the health boards on page 35, page 36, they're all essentially the governor's items carried forward. On page 36, you see a board of optometry. Representative Peterson had House File 907. She also had one for the Board of Pharmacy, House File 1659. And Representative Mack at the Board of Social Work carried House File 960 that I'll implement those. And going to page 37, we have Representative Backer's bill at the Council on Disability, line 2958. House File 1632 dealt with their being able to provide advice to the state and developers on technology and building codes and the ADA. And then jumping down to the very last line, 2974, this is the Department of Commerce. There is a small appropriation in Representative Mack's bill, House File 5, for the Commissioner of Commerce to develop and ask for a waiver from the federal government in order to sell, in order for people to get tax credits if they buy policies outside of the exchange. And Mr. Chair, that's sort of the items. I don't know if you want anything else.
I think we'll go to questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Loeffler.
I just wanted to, there's some fairly large changes in this, And I do you want to, do you prefer we go in order of the thing or just kind of take people as they have questions?
Why don't you, I mean, are your questions having to do with specific issues of just about where is this going or how is this being applied, or are the questions dealing with, you have several in the same bin, or
yeah,
or what?
Well, I think there's a couple that are, you have a couple of large bins, and then you have a lot of little tweaking that we're just still trying to, you know, like, and so, like, the administrative reductions, I mean, that's always a popular thing to do in terms of nobody, it's easy to go after bureaucrats at the top, but the 15%, you know, ended up a pretty large number in both state agencies, and I'm wondering if you've had a chance at all to talk about what the impact that means in terms of, will we have less regulation, ability to respond to complaints from consumers, have you kind of got a vision of what services they would discontinue? I don't know if you've looked at the agencies or had discussions with them at all.
Representative Loeffler, we have not heard back from the agencies in terms of how they may absorb or react to proposed reductions in their overall administrative costs.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just thinking, like, for DHS, it's $30 million, and most of those people are actually doing more than administration. A lot of them are doing review of whether or not the counties and our contractors and everyone else are doing what they're supposed to be doing. And so I'm just, you know, wondering, and I'm looking forward to hearing from them what that means. None of us want to have more people sitting, writing, taking too long to write rules and regulations or not doing things that assure accountability, but we do need to check into that. And how about on the managed care administrative costs and competitive bidding? We're in the midst of an RFP right now, and can you tell us how you got those numbers? And we're, I'm on page 5. I just started at the list where I kind of flagged a few things, and then I'll let other people jump
sure.
in, too.
Sure, Representative. Fair enough, Representative Loeffler. The administrative costs are somewhat putting things in line with the same reductions that we're asking of the agencies. The repricing for the competitive bids reflects the fact that the Metro bid for public programs is going to be going statewide, as I understand it, this summer. And that, the reductions of $50 million is an attempt to reflect the savings that we will experience from going from the metro area to statewide, anticipating that we will be benefiting from the same savings that we would experience in the metro area.
Mr. Chair, we are actually, I think, statewide in managed care right now. We're just doing a complete, so I'm not quite sure what that means.
Representative Loeffler, from what I understand, the June 1st, there will be a change that will enact statewide that will significantly increase the competition that we should experience from that, and that aims to get back from the savings that we would experience. And as that rolls out, we have heard from the department that they are experiencing savings in that area, and they want to and plan to grow and in the savings that they're going to experience statewide. And in fact, I asked Commissioner Franz what the number one innovation in the governor's new budget is, and in fact he referenced this very item in Ways and Means when I asked that question, which was the cost savings due to the competitive bidding of public programs.
Well, we're all in favor of reducing costs when we can, but $235 million, I think with the payment shift and all of the total in this item, and so we want to make sure that it isn't going to be affecting the quality of the care people get. And you've labeled it as other, but we need to be sure.
Representative Liebling.
Mr. Chair, just to get some more information about that, so just to really be clear, and we're talking about the statewide bidding, so that number, $50 million, is not a number that came from the Department of Human Services? I mean, obviously the governor didn't have that in his budget, and could you explain how you got that number?
Well, we were just looking at the reasonableness of expectation. I would like it, I would love it if that number were significantly higher than that. But we're just trying to take a reasonable assumption of what should be expected as we go from as the program continues to grow and the competition yields more savings. So I would like it to yield actually more savings than that, and perhaps it will.
So, Mr. Chair, if I may ask Mr. Berg whether you're aware of anything from DHS that number is based on, or you know, anything from MMB that's based on?
Mr. Berg.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, no, I don't have anything.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Berg. And then, Mr. Chair, I think going back to what Representative Loeffler was asking about the reduction that you have on line 134, which is something, the administrative reduction to the central office that we never discussed. And I wonder, and obviously there was no bill on this, there was no testimony on it, could you just give us a little more detail? I see it's broken out into different areas, and I assume that that's just the 15% across the board for each of those areas. And I guess I'd like to ask you what you are aware of in the department in particular that could be cut in each of those areas.
Representative Liebling, we're just asking for administrative reductions, just as we are asking all of the agencies to look at their budget and to try to look at savings first in non-direct care areas for trying to reduce costs, and that's what we're simply trying to do within the administrative areas of the agency.
And Mr. Chair, if I may just ask Mr. Berg about that. Mr. Berg, are you aware of anything, any data that this is based on, or anything that the department's given you to give you the any idea of, you know, whether 15% is a doable figure or what that would mean? Maybe let me not say doable. I mean, I guess we could eliminate the whole department if we chose to do so, and that would be doable. But do you have any indication from anywhere about what a 15% cut in each of these areas of DHS would mean?
Mr. Berg.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, I don't have anything on the exactly how they would achieve this. I suspect the department will be providing something like that soon.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'll have more questions, but I'll let other members have an opportunity as well. I think Representative Schoen was interested.
Mr. Stolarczyk, do you know if they have signed up to testify on Monday yet? They will be. All right. Well, they will be. They're already signed up, so I'm sure we'll hear from them on Monday, Representative Lee.
Okay.
Representative Schoen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry if I'm belaboring this. Simple farm kid. $100 million for the managed care. I thought I heard Mr. Berg say he didn't have any documentation or didn't have information from them. Can you give me a highlight of how we arrived at that number? And if that comes to be true, that would be magical. It'd be fantastic. So can you, who or how did you get to that number? Or what was the information you based that on?
Well, actually, it's just an extrapolation of what we hope to expect from that. But I'm frankly a little bit curious as to why the governor is not actually booking savings for that and more savings in that, seeing as how that's the number one policy initiative and reform area that the commissioner actually highlighted as for saving money. So We anticipate that would be a doable number, and hopefully it would be significantly more, and look forward to hearing from them on Monday as to what they might be willing to expect. But I would hope that they would be doing more than that, but also realize that we are looking for, asking for, and expecting large savings across the board here in the area of our public programs. And that's something that I heard from the committee over the course of the session from both sides of the committee. And so we are certainly probably going to hear from them that that will be a stretch goal. But also we understand that that is a policy change that the Governor Dayton embarked on that we agree on is a good one that will in fact result in lower costs. We want to make sure that we pass those lower costs back to the taxpayer, and so that we are seeing the taxpayers are seeing the results and the benefits of the competitive bidding. We want to make sure that the taxpayer actually benefits from that.
Thank you, Chair. And I know that we've had some discussion over the last couple of years as to the bidding process for the health companies or the MCOs, just related to, you know, public information and what's available and what's not. And I know that some of that people believe there'd be some cost savings there. So this is not a plan to say we're going to tell those MCOs to reduce their cost by $100 million or else. I mean, it's not going to be a mandate or something. That's just you're saying that the metro bid versus the outstate bid and combining it into one should get us there.
Well, I think you were asking about why wasn't that number higher, and I think when you look at the other areas within this that we're asking for reductions pretty much across the board within that. So if you add those columns together, you're going to see some significant cost savings that we're going to be asking our public programs to be producing. We want to make sure that we pass those savings on to the taxpayers, that if we do see reductions in costs, as the commissioner believes that there will be with competitive bidding, as we believe that there will be with competitive bidding. We are also asking for administrative cost reductions. We are also asking for inflation to be taken out. So from our public programs, we are asking, that's a big lift. We understand that. But that's also what I heard from the committee over the course of the session, was that with the billions of dollars that's going out federally and state, for our public programs, the inflation in those areas, the scarcity of dollars, that we want to make sure that those dollars are going as far as they can, and that savings, in fact, are passed back to the taxpayer or given to patients in better care.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm with you on the idea. I hope we can find those savings. I'm concerned. I mean, I'm a little concerned that that might be a stretch to get to $100 million in the biennium from those companies. But I might have a couple more questions on something else.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And there's a couple other. I mean, the managed care process is undergoing rebidding right now, but you've got a couple of other items that just kind of were glossed over. You've got a remove the MA forecast inflation on line 143. That's $80 million. And then on the next page, on 163, there's a $135 million managed care payment delay, which looks to me like a shift. Can you give us the background on those two? It looks like you've got, you know, quite a few hundreds of millions of dollars here all tied up in managed care items that we haven't seen before.
Yep. Actually, if you turn to page 6 of 38, line 163, you'll see 135 for 16-17. That's a continuation of the current budget that was passed in 13 and also in 11.
Then why is it a zero, Mr. Chair, in 16?
I believe that's the way it has been forecast in the previous two budgets.
Is that correct? And then can you explain the MA forecast inflation, removing that in our planning?
Yes, Representative Loeffler. That is just a reflection that inflation is baked in some forecasts and not others. We are baking in growth within those programs and inflation on top of growth. And, we are looking to remove the inflation on top of headcount growth just because of the inflation in this area of our budget. We just simply can't absorb those kinds of cost increases of both headcount inflation as well as line item inflation, which if you look at other areas like of the budget, we do not do that. So that's what we are pulling out savings for that.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think we have to have realistic projections, and I'm just, you know, medical inflation is a reality, whether we like it or not. We can't just sort of wipe it off the books, and I think it's been responsible for us to actually plan on it as we're projecting out our costs. But
well, Representative Loeffler, I'm sure the there's lots of folks within the industry who we'll hear from on Monday who, in fact, probably haven't seen payment increases. Direct care workers, physicians, and others that have not actually experienced those levels of inflation in the past years, and we'll probably hear from them on Monday.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. But there are some things that actually federally require some inflation, and I just think we have to and the others who don't get it federally required are very jealous. But, you know, we can't change the federal law with this. I'd next like us to really discuss the top of page 7, which we have $196 million of fiscal year 15 dollars, as I understand it, that is going to be transferred to the general fund. And perhaps you or Mr. Berg can explain to us how this shift between bienniums?
Representative Loeffler, Mr. Berg can probably show you how this works exactly on the spreadsheet. But the use of 15 money has been kind of debated, and we will be addressing that on Monday in the Ways and Means Committee. But Mr. Berg can probably direct you exactly to how this relates back to the spreadsheet and how that might appear.
Mr. Chair, members, if you look, really it's easiest to work from the bottom up on page 7 on line 192. What's happening is that there's a section of law at the end of the appropriations section in the bill that appropriates $196 million in fiscal 15 to the Commissioner of Human Services for transfer into the Healthcare Access Fund. So you see on line 192, negative 196, that's revenue into the Healthcare Access Fund. It then, the language specifies that that doesn't cancel and is not subject to transfer, and that it may only be used to pay Minnesota Care claims incurred before the program ends, thus having a healthcare access fund expenditure of 196 on line 191. And that, in turn, gets you to line 190, which results in a reduction in general fund costs in MA of $196 million. And so the net result of this is a reduction of $196 million in 16-17 medical assistance costs and zero change in the healthcare access fund balance for the biennium.
So, Mr. Chair, as I understand this, then we are not only crossing bienniums, but we're asking the healthcare access fund to increase your budget by $196 million in the general fund. Is that correct?
Chair?
Mr. Berg.
It actually, in the general fund, it reduces it by
right.
$196.
Right. So it gives you more spending authority in the general fund because you switch the costs.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Loeffler, it actually counts as a negative, so it helps us achieve our target of reducing the general fund.
But it comes from the Healthcare Access Fund.
Well, actually, Representative Liebling-Loeffler, it comes from the general fund. It goes into the healthcare access fund, then gets spent on these costs, which then creates a reduction in the spending in the general fund in 16-17. It's an expenditure in the general fund in 15.
But we're continuing to cross the biennial barrier.
Representative Loeffler, yeah, we have to figure out what we want to do with the 15 money. You know, and that's what we're going to be debating and looking at. And it's been on the bottom line, and we're going to be talking about that in Ways and Means on Monday. But the first meeting that we had this year, outside of overview, was on the Healthcare Access Fund and on the transfers and the uses of those funds, and on the problem that we have, very frankly, in the Healthcare Access Fund and the uses of it long term. So that is something that we are going to be discussing, I'm sure, more Monday, and as we move forward, because it kind of goes to the crux of how we're going to be paying for health insurance for low-income Minnesotans long-term, because we currently see the healthcare access fund as a vestige of traditional Minnesota care, and we see with the expansion of Medicaid a blending of those in moving forward, and we've got a payment structure that really doesn't really match how we're paying for health insurance right now. So it's something that I think we need to reform and look at as we move forward. And the temptation of using that for non-healthcare purposes continues as long as it's there. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to go back to the line 143 section about removing MA forecast inflation, and just that and the next section, and just ask Mr. Berg to talk a little bit about that so that we can understand what that means, why that, there's every term, every time we put together an HHS budget, the chair is tasked with trying to figure out what can be reduced. I mean, there's just no question about it, because this is a very fast-growing budget, and so yet that, I assume that MA inflation is there and has been there, and I just don't recall any other chair having taken that to increase their spending. And so I'm just wondering if Mr. Berg can talk about why that's there and what the effect is of cutting that money and removing that inflation factor.
Mr. Berg.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling. The background is most of the budget doesn't have inflation applied to it, but what DHS does for the forecast for managed care, this doesn't apply for fee-for-service or waiver programs, but in managed care, they apply a 5% increase per year to the elderly and disabled contract and 4% to the other categories per year. And in talking with Mr. Welch at DHS, I understand that there is not a hard and fast rule, but they think of this as basically half cost inflation, medical cost inflation, and half utilization. They do keep a watch on a long-term trend, trailing trend on medical cost inflation, but they really apply just the percentage to the contracts. This is based on taking the medical cost inflation, not the utilization portion, out. And to say what it does, these are forecasted programs, so if in fact we're right, as everybody always says, the forecast is wrong, we know that. We correct each year, we have a forecast article, as this bill does, to correct what we have guessed before to the actual. In this case, if we guess wrong on the high side and it's a falling forecast, we will have already realized some of the savings against the forecast. If we guess wrong on the low side and it's higher than we expect, then the next forecast article and forecast change will be higher than it would have been otherwise. But again, the forecast corrects for that. If you want to look at sort of how it works, how it works relative to the forecast, it increases the likelihood that we maybe will be off on the forecast, but the forecast corrects itself. That's why we do forecasted programming. So if we're wrong, it means that the next forecast may be higher, or it may be lower than it was would otherwise be, depending on which direction the error is in.
So Mr. Berg, if, Mr. Chair, Mr. Berg, if we do what this what the bill is calling for, which is take out that inflation factor as you've just discussed, and medical inflation, which right now has been pretty low, actually across the country, it's been the cost curve has definitely been bent on medical expenses. But what if medical expenses should pick up again, the rate of inflation, and we should end up without this cushion? I guess that's how I'm understanding it, a little bit of a cushion built in there. You know, what's the potential risk in that?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, it's not really a cushion, because we forecast these programs, and when we're wrong, we change the appropriations we've already made to match what they should have been. So again, the risk of your error is maybe greater here, but it depends on whether the error is on the plus side or the minus side. And it means if we guess wrong in a falling forecast with this, we will have already realized some of the savings. If we guessed wrong in a rising forecast, our next forecast change will be bigger than it otherwise would, but we'll be in the same place of this is a forecast change that will be in a forecast article in a future bill.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Berg. And then the second part of my question had to do with the next issue, managing MCO administrative costs. And of course, that is something that the committee has a great deal of interest in. But I just wonder about if you could just discuss a little bit the method that's here, which is just saying we're just going to take $100 million and say that we're going to reduce administrative costs by that amount. Have you received data to back that up? Is there any reason to believe that that will be doable? Or can you just give us any other information about that you've received?
Mr. Berg.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, I don't have any information like that, but this there is language in the bill, in the healthcare article, that directs the commissioner to negotiate contracts that will reduce administrative costs paid by the state, and then sets a benchmark for how much should be saved. So there is language in there telling the commissioner to affect this through the negotiation process.
And Representative Liebling, I can just tell you that reflects perhaps one of the frustrations that I've had in the last couple cycles in both 11 and 13. Departmental projected growth for 11 in particular, when we faced a horrendous deficit, that our projections coming out for program growth and inflation they actually ended up not to be so. So when we went into 12, if you'll remember, the actual program growth going into 12 was much less than what was predicted by the department. And so much so that it was, we had made decisions based on that program growth that really affected other areas of the budget, like higher ed, for example, and other areas where we had to really do some cutting that we did not want to do, and in other portions of our budget that were just frankly disproportionately paid for the price of bad forecasting with that inflation. So we saw that again in the last biennium, and that you might think it's better safe than sorry, but actually that does cause effects in the other areas of our budget that I think we really need to dial in. on that inflation within that target. Representative Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if we're ready to defer to sort of going through this in order, or but the my first question was the I believe the on page 7, line 200, the public programs verification. I mean that is a striking number there, that $300 million savings. So is that the Pearson bill, Representative Pearson, where we talked about where we were comparing Minnesota to Illinois, and I don't know what they were talking about, finding dead people on the rolls, and but what, how does that number projected? I mean, is that based on percentage of cases, or how did you come up with that number?
Representative Allen, that's a combination of Representative Pearson's bill as well as Representative Drazkowski's bill, and basically that is the combination of the two bills, and that's looking at basically all public programs in a very comprehensive way, similar to other states. Illinois and Pennsylvania in particular, but perhaps Representative Pearson might amplify on that a little bit about the kinds of things that we hope to achieve. That's his bill. But when we look at the overall scale in comparison to those two states, as well as looking at the fiscal notes that we received and the areas that they looked at within those fiscal notes, combining those together and kind of projecting them out, that's where we scaled that out to be. Representative Pearson.
And get back. Yeah, so as you'll recall from testimony, you know, we were basically dealing with the programs Minnesota Care and focusing on making sure folks that do not qualify for those programs would be eliminated from those lists, and the projections were very strong.
Representative Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So when you say the projections were very strong, what projections exactly?
Fiscal note that we went over during that committee hearing.
Representative Allen.
Yeah, Mr. Chair. And also, I had a question about the TANF funds. I understand what the sort of the shift or the home visit, that $7 million, that would go to reduce the general fund. But there was a task force last year, if you recall, that looked at how TANF funds are being spent. And so was there any consideration to, one proposal was to take to increase the cash grants by having the working family credit come out of the tax budget so that there would be additional dollars. Was that, were any of those recommendations that came out of the task force, were they are they reflected in this budget?
Just a second, Representative Allen. I'm going to look back and see which bills tied back to that, and I can hopefully get you an answer quick here. Representative Allen, the Representative Franson had a bill that dealt with some of that. The savings that we have come from a family home visiting program, I'm told. Not as familiar with it probably as Representative Franson, but it did not incorporate the recommendation that you just referenced.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One more question.
Representative Allen.
Going back to the public programs verification audit. So the fiscal note, I believe it was 18. It was considerably less in the fiscal. I think it was closer to $18 million. So how do we get? I'm still not understanding how we get from $18 million to $300 million.
Yeah, there's actually two fiscal notes, and they push most of the savings out into the second year. And those are only dealing with a small portion of the programs. This would deal with all public programs, not just the health programs. So when we go across all of the health programs and we push that back, I think Representative Drazkowski had 146 in the second biennium, and the rollout was much smaller. We look at comprehensively across all public programs. That's the savings that we're projecting.
So, Mr. Chair, so basically, then it's based on the fiscal notes, which were basically not more than $35 million savings, and so the rest of it is just scaled based on projection, based on. Is that correct, or?
Representative Allen, the fiscal notes incorporate a small percentage of the overall programs that we're looking at. We're not just looking at those small number of programs. We're looking at it across all public programs, as we've seen in the other states that have incorporated this. And so those, and also moving up the timelines on that. So we're using them as a scale basis. For how we would, the savings that we hope to incorporate as we move it across public programs. Representative Schoen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize. I'm going to go back to the MCO thing one more time because I'm trying to find the area in statute. Is it Section 28, lines 44.3 to 44.9 in the bill that deal with the manage MCO admin costs?
Is that, yeah. Which spreadsheet?
Okay, so on the spreadsheet, it's line 149.
149 on the spreadsheet.
So that's that $100 million in the biennium. And is it in the bill, in the DE1, is it 44.3 to 44.9?
Hold, please. Mr. Chun, can you dial us in on the page and line, please?
Mr. Chair, Representative Jones, that is correct. It is Section 28 on page 44 of the bill.
Okay, Mr. Chair, then.
Representative
being that it's projected, and maybe this is normal, so I'll still play off on some newness here, but it says that the commissioner shall negotiate for the state medical assistance savings of $100 million for the biennium ending June 30th, 2017. So if Commissioner Jessen doesn't do that, do I have to arrest her after that? I mean, will she be violating state law or a performance improvement plan or termination? I guess when we put that in statute, I mean, it's kind of, I don't know how we can force her or the department to negotiate that other than saying we're just not going to give it to you.
Correct. Representative Schoen, typically when we're looking at prospective savings, which is what we have to do and should do every single time we put together a budget, we have to build within that how are we going to achieve that, and what happens if we don't? So let me look at the section that you're referring to. There's two, so I can see where we're at.
And then on the other part of that question, while you're looking, if that's okay, Mr. Chair, let's say we came in $20 million short of that $100 million, would that cost then be shifted to the counties as part of the administrative costs? Or, I mean, how would we make up? Would we come back and do a deficiency on that, or I mean, the negotiations didn't come up there. What is the normal procedure for handling that, and would the cost shift be to the county or no? I guess that's my number one question. If we came up $20 million short on those, because don't the counties administer or do flow throughs on a lot of this stuff for us?
Well, Representative Schoen, I think what we would like to likely see is the negotiations within the contracts with the state, and that would be incorporated within that. That's obviously what we're looking for, And as to the nuances of what might happen, I think we can ask ask the department on Monday and can look a little bit deeper into the language on what the backstops are within each of those, because there will be different ones within each of the prospective cost changes. And let me just say that from our public programs, we're asking a lot within these savings. I got to tell you, that's what I heard from the committee as well over the course of the session. And this is where the public dollars are going, and we want to make sure that we get control over that. And, you know, I'm sure we're going to hear from the plans you know, the from their ability to absorb that. And you know, I think we'll probably, they're probably not going to like that, understand that. We'll hope, I'm sure we'll hear from them on Monday. And also try to get some better better information for you, how we've done that in the past and what our backstops are, because I think that will be important for the committee to understand that you can't just ask people to do stuff within the next two-year period just to achieve savings. Otherwise, we would just do that. So, all right. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you don't mind, I want to go back to the public programs verification. And I was just looking at the fiscal note on Representative Drazkowski's bill. As you noted, that was the more expensive one because it continued on. It wasn't just a one-time thing. And that projected about $18 million savings in the first biennium and $147 in the second. And that was just MA and Minnesota Care. So you're right, that's only the health care programs. But if I look at your budget just for the health care programs, you have budgeted $279 million. That's twice what the fully ramped up program would do under Representative Drazkowski's bill in the health programs. And so to find twice as many people ineligible is a pretty big reach, given that I remember Mr. Johnson, Deputy Commissioner Chuck Johnson from DHS, said that there were quite a few things that were different from us than Illinois. And, you know, they had a big backlog, and ours was like one-tenth the backlog that they had. And, you know, there were some very key differences that he highlighted. And so do you have some, does Mr. Berg have anything that would substantiate this $279 million savings just in the public health programs?
Representative Loeffler, I think that, you know, when you look at waste, fraud, and abuse, there's not just eligibility. There's basically, there's people, stuff, and procedures. And eligibility and then rates that you're looking at. And it's not, you know, people billing for one thing and delivering another, or fraud, like we've seen in other states like Florida, where it's just been outrageous. We understand that that's not here, but there is presumably and presumptively quite a bit of waste and abuse within that area that we need to tighten in on. That I think the legislative auditor's report, when you look at the error rate, for example, that the legislative auditor found of 17%, we understand that that doesn't mean that 17% of all of our costs are retrievable, certainly, or that even 17% of the people that we looked at are ineligible. But within that very tight time frame, we did find a 17% error rate. And when we looked at, I think Representative Drazkowski looked at Pennsylvania and Illinois and extrapolated some basic costs across programs, that's where we came out aggregately around 300 as the goal for the combined target of Representative Pearson's and Representative Drazkowski's bills.
Well, Mr. Chair, that unless you're proposing a different program than what was presented, in terms of hiring a private contractor similar to the Illinois program, which I think is what is here, are you saying that you're actually proposing something different than that model?
Representative Loeffler, I think when we go to the section, you'll see that both of those bills are combined in the section, and what we're looking for is a combined savings within the two to hit that target. And again, that's not just eligibility for people, or do you not qualify? So it's not just there's people on programs that shouldn't be on programs, but it's also within the programs, other public programs, and also billing, for example, Medicare and Medicaid for the same procedure, billing for hospice services after death, billing for frontline drug and delivering generic, and those kinds of verification procedures that these audits typically do then collect and then give a portion to the state and keep a fee for the consultant.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Then you're describing a very different system than what was presented in committee, which was only about program eligibility. And you're actually talking about then looking at providers and provider fraud, which is a broader issue that we did not discuss. And if you could get us the background that you got from those other states or from Representative Drazkowski, we would need that, because that's a different program than what we heard.
Yeah, Representative Loeffler, Ms. Iverson has pointed out to me we split it into two articles. There's eligibility article, waste, fraud, and abuse article, and there's separate RFPs for those, so they're divided into two.
Okay, and
Mr. Chun, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Representative Loeffler, but maybe Mr. Chun, since you put the sections together, can you at least give us the page and line on those, and then we can refer back. And if there's other questions from sections, we're kind of going back and forth now already, so maybe we'll abbreviate our walkthrough of the sections later, but this is probably just as good a way to do it as any, so why don't we continue as we are, Representative Loeffler.
Sure.
So, Mr. Chun, I'm sorry.
Representative Loeffler, the two sections that Representative Dean is referring to would be Section 31 on page 45 of Article 1, so this would be sort of a modification of Representative Pearson's legislation. And the second section dealing more with provider fraud would be on page 46, section 32.
Did you say, excuse me, Mr. Chen, the second one was page 46, section...
Page 46, section 32 would be the language dealing more with billing and provider issues.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Chen, as it's written, it appears this would only apply to fee-for-service. Is that correct? And is it medical and home and community-based services? Is it anything under our health care programs? CA, anything?
Loeffler, the language is general, and I suppose to some extent would depend on how the RFP is framed. It talks about improper Medicaid payments made to a provider, which presumably would pick up the fee-for-service providers, and it depends on whether or not the definition of provider, gets extended to include, capitation payments to the managed care plans. But I think primarily it looks like the language would focus on fee-for-service.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chun, because this is a totally new insert, if you can get us some additional background, or perhaps we can have testimony from DHS on, because I know they have a unit that already deals with provider fraud, and we just, I don't know how this works with what they're currently doing. I know that just having looked after the last hearing on the eligibility fraud, there was some real concerns about whether or not it was real or not, even the fiscal note we had, because of how it was done. When we, Illinois was never able to meet its projections in any way, and so I think we really need to be careful. We can't budget on what we hope we find. It has to be based on something, and at least in Illinois, they budgeted, I think, one thing I saw, and I haven't yet verified, is, you know, they got dramatically less. I mean, just a few percentages of what they actually budgeted for. And so we need to really make sure we know what these things are. And it's kind of late in the process to be bringing in a new thing, so let's get some information. But if you could provide your background, that'd be great.
Fair enough, Representative Loeffler. Representative Lane.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, I'm up to three things.
I apologize. I skipped over you, and I thought I had missed you, so I apologize for that,
right.
Representative Wayne.
I think the first comment would be on this. Mr. Chair, you'd made some comments about in the past we cut too much because we had the expectations of a cost being higher because we used inflation, and that was very bad because then we weren't able to fund the things we needed to. We had cut too much. Now it seems to me that we might be going the reverse direction and booking too much savings so that we can fund other interesting things. But it just seems like we're going the other direction. And as Representative Loeffler was just pointing out, booking savings that won't pan out, and yet we're planning on it and spending it. So that's a concern. And then the next thing would be, as we were talking about this verification of things, we've talked about the fraud of the individual, and now we've been talking about provider fraud, and as Ms. Chung just mentioned, that it's not carried over necessarily to capitation rates, which should be the major concern of misappropriation of funds through the MCOs. So that when we talk about repealing the OLA audit, and I know that I was here for the talk where it was, we don't need this money, we could do it ourselves, but I'm still concerned about actually having a real, honest-to-goodness audit, not of the little piece called administration costs, but the actual, how are they using the money that we give them for medical costs. So we don't know that. To this day, we don't know that. As they keep saying, we have all these reports, but these reports, each time we say, provide this report, somehow it gets shifted so that it becomes kind of an innocuous thing, and then there's another busy report that provides us with nothing. And I would just hope we wouldn't do that again. I'm afraid that we're going to push again on administrative costs, which will so easily set up the possibility of those administrative costs looking very nice, but where did the costs go? They went into what we would label medical costs, but are they really? Because we don't know, we can't audit them, and we've just taken out the audit that that could get that done and booked $1.2 million savings on that. I'm just very, very concerned about us actually looking deeper. You talk about a provider might give a brand name drug instead of a generic drug. Small potatoes to some of the things that we don't know. We don't know what's out there in the insurance providers, the capitation rates we give. We don't know how valid they are. We don't know where our money is actually going, and we're taking out the audit that could get us there. So my third thing would be I need some information around family home visiting and what's happened to that. My understanding is that we've really, really cut that back. I think it's one of the vital programs that we can do in so many things, in education achievement gap and in health. We know middle ages depends on those first few years of life, and this is the way that we actually address basically 0 to 3. We do that through family home visiting. It's not a curriculum. It's not education. It's not going putting them in school. It's having them have an experience, 0 to 3, that is actually beneficial for the proper development, and we all know how the brain development plays into that. This is our way. We want to do it as well as and as much as we can. But could you explain to me what's happened to that program in this?
All right, Representative Lane, can you give me your spreadsheet line number, and we'll try to tie it back to the section as best we can here.
I think the family home visiting might be on page 30.
Okay.
Or part of it, maybe this is only the part that is funded. I don't know where the part that is, how that all plays out, but my concern is what are we actually doing with family home visiting?
Representative Lane, I think that's it's on a different section, but we're going to go ahead and dig it up here. Mr. Berg, do you know where it's at?
Mr. Chair, the part where we are taking the family home visiting nurse TANF money is on page 32, line 21-22.
Okay, yeah, we take savings in that area. The governor does not. What are the savings that we're taking from that?
Mr. Chair, we're taking the TANF appropriation for family home visiting, which is $7,827,000 a year. There's really kind of three different parts of family home visiting. If you look at it, this part has been there for many, many years. I think this appropriation has been stable, maybe going back to the original program, I think. There is also federal money that the department gets through what are called the MCV grant program that deals with family home visiting, a little bit different type of family home visiting. That's not affected here. The governor proposed a third family home visiting, which was a state general fund appropriated one, which we are not funding here.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Bird. Representative Lane.
So we're taking the TANF money that went into family home visiting to move it into the MFIB program. Is that correct?
Yes.
So this... I have a bill to double the MFIB grants, so I'm very concerned about that area, and maybe TANF is the correct place for that to come from, but that doesn't mean that we leave something out that is at least of as equal importance. It just brings up the image in my mind of the movie Sophie's Choice, where the woman went into the concentration camp and had to decide which one you're going to give up, your son or your daughter. Family home visiting is extremely important. Making sure that the children that are in the MFIB program are cared for is extremely important. I can't see making this choice one or the other.
All right. Representative Mack.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just curious. I'm looking at line 269, the MAEPD premium payments, and I'm just wondering if the investment we're making there, if what that brings the premium levels back to, or I don't know if that's questions for you, Mr. Chair, or Mr. Berg. Does this bring it back to the 2011 levels, Mr. Chair? I was just curious.
Representative Mack, I believe that's Representative Albright's bill.
Okay.
And let me see if I can dig up an answer for you here in the stuff. If not, we'll have to get it from Representative Albright over the weekend. Mr. Berg, you got an answer for us?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mack, I believe there was a reduction, or rather an increase in the fees passed in 2011, which could not be implemented due to the ACA maintenance of effort provision, which now has expired. That increase would go into effect, I believe, July 1st, and this keeps the premiums at their current level. It negates that increase.
So there was a baked-in
yes.
cost hit that they were going to get that we're trying to take away.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Other questions? Representative Liebling.
Well, Mr. Chair, just still on that point, I thought some of the testimony had been that there were actual increases in the premiums. So I'm kind of surprised at that answer. Am I just wrong about that? Because I had understood that that premiums for a lot of these folks had actually increased and that they were struggling to pay them. And what I just understood this answer is that they're scheduled to increase and that this appropriation keeps them from increasing.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, it's my impression that the increase was yet to come, but I don't have the fiscal note. I could be proved wrong.
Pinelli.
Okay.
He's not here. You know what? Let's come back to that when Ms. Pinelli comes back into the room, because that was her section, and I'm sure she'll be able to have the answer for that.
Okay. So,
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think maybe we could turn to the Minnesota Care section. And let's see, I just had it here, and now I've kind of lost it. And, okay, yes, it's... That's online starting around 171. And so I just want to, I don't have the fiscal note in front of me. I don't recall if this, maybe Mr. Berg could tell me, is this what the fiscal note had that we looked at in committee? And if not, what changes were there to this? Because, you know, obviously this is booking a huge savings. And I think it's important for us to examine what the assumptions are that go into that.
Yeah, Representative Liebling, it's actually not as much as we thought it was going to be. And actually, there was the hiccup with the fiscal note that after we actually posted our spreadsheets, we found the department came back and said that they were pulling back their fiscal note and reissuing. So that was one of the issues that we were dealing with yesterday. I just want to apologize to people who had to push everything back a day, including the committee. I feel bad about that. But I didn't want to put out a bill and a fiscal note that didn't go together. So that's why I wanted to make sure that we were locked down both ways before we came back. This was one of the issues that we did have. And actually, it came back a little bit different from that, but Mr. Berg can kind of amplify on that.
In Mr. Chair, and if you could, Mr. Berg, also talk about the, you know, we pay for Minnesota Care out of healthcare access funds, and if you could kind of discuss that issue, how that flow of funding is working here.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, the what you see here are the numbers from the current fiscal note, the revised fiscal note. There were no, essentially you asked about the assumptions. There were no changes in assumptions that changed the fiscal note. What happened was a simple clerical error, a transposition of numbers. And if you look on line 174 for 2017, the department accidentally put $541 million in the original note when they should have put $451 million. There was no change in assumption. It was just an error. So that's where the change in the numbers came from. I guess I'm not sure, Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, quite what you mean by the discussing the Healthcare Access Fund. This saves, as you see, a $574 million in potential expenditures in the Healthcare Access Fund. Elsewhere in the sheet, those are spent on general fund costs, which medical assistance, which reduce our general fund expenditure. Because Minnesota Care does not exist into the future, there's a substantial surplus in funds in the tails, and this bill would eliminate the tax 1 year early from its current date. I guess I'm not sure what else you were looking for there.
Okay, so Mr. Chair, if I could just clarify. So Mr. Berg, I think, I guess I was asking you to sort of explain how this is all working, because, so just to be really clear, right now Minnesota Care is funded by the Healthcare Access Fund, which is that special fund where the provider taxes are deposited that was essentially created for the purpose of this program. And then what this bill is doing is eliminating that program, taking that money and moving it over into the general fund and spending it on other things.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, that's essentially the idea. I would have a technical clarification. It does not transfer the funds into the general fund. It pays directly for costs that otherwise the general fund would pay for.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Berg. And then I think, too, there was some, I think there had been some discussion about how quickly the Minnesota Care program could be ended and still, I remember some of, there were quite a few, there was a lot of text in that fiscal note, and I'll have to go back and look at it, but as I recall, there was some issue about whether this could be done in time to meet the requirements of the legislation. And, I mean, is there anything that you can tell us about those assumptions, or maybe that would be more appropriate for DHS when they testify? I'm not really sure, but was there any additional information about that? And, you know, as we're booking these savings by getting rid of this program, does that include all the closing down costs and everything, and everything that we'd have to do to end this program by January 1st?
Representative Liebling, I think DHS is going to testify to that on Monday and what the roll-up and roll-out costs are going to be, so I'm sure they're going to be prepared to talk about that and concerns that they have, legitimate concerns that they would have on that.
Okay.
And I think just more broadly, I think that it's a discussion that I obviously wanted to have about where we're going to go, and provider tax is going away. We began transferring money out of the Healthcare Access Fund for Medicaid in the last biennium, I think it's a debate that we're going to have in the next few years about how we're going to pay for low-income healthcare, whether it's going to be through a single program that gets expanded or whether it's going to be through private health insurance and helping people do that. And it's not a new debate or a tussle, but it's certainly one that Minnesota seems to be right in the middle of.
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess I would say that we're not going to have it in the next few years. We're going to have it this year because you put it in your bill. So it's pretty much right here, front and center, and I think the state is sort of starting to hear that this is your way of dealing with the budget when we have this $2 billion surplus, and I think the debate has begun. So I expect we're going to have to reach some resolution to that this year in pretty short order, I think.
Representative Liebling, what I would just point out is that the Healthcare Access Fund, the source of that is a 2% provider tax, which is sunsetting. And the uses for that within the structure that we have is designed for something that doesn't exist anymore. So whether or not we do this bill this year, we're still going to have the same discussion because what we have currently is not sustainable into the next biennium. And I think we all recognize that, and the governor recognizes that as well.
So, Mr. Chair, I don't know if there are other members ready to ask questions, but I have another if nobody else needs to right now.
Sure. Go ahead, Representative.
Okay. Well, I wanted to ask about on line 237. We've got the 5% one-time increase in the health and community-based services, and I just wanted to ask Mr. Berg to kind of explain how that's structured and what would happen then when you look at the spreadsheet, you go across and you've got the money there in this biennium, and then you've got zeros going forward. So I would like to ask him what will happen. What does that mean? What happens in 2018 under this bill with the 5%?
Mr. Berg.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, this is a one-time increase in rates of 5%. So the rate would increase in fiscal 2017, and it would go back to the current rate in fiscal 18.
So, Mr. Chair and Mr. Berg, so if somebody got a pay increase who's delivering these services and they got that pay increase here under the bill in 2017, in the 2017 fiscal year, then when the 2018 fiscal year comes, would they receive a pay cut?
Well, Mr. Berg.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, not to kind of dodge your question, I see where you're going, but these are payment rates to providers, And so how the provider chooses to use them, I mean, they're, you could think of structuring this as a bonus or other issues, but your basic premise is right, that the rate goes up to the provider in 17 and it goes away in 18, but then the provider has their own issues with how they pass that along for their cost structure.
Okay, thank you.
And, you know, Representative Liebling, one of the things that we heard was the wages for direct care workers across the state of Minnesota and people losing really good people to fast food restaurants and Walmarts and other places that they're trying to compete with. Representative Hamilton came in with a bill that was very aggressive, but one that he believes very strongly in, and I think the committee would like to support, but it's also very expensive. Governor didn't support it. However, we thought that it was a priority for the committee on both sides of the aisle, and so I think we've got a very good position in the bill, and it's one that I hope we can defend moving forward if it should pass. Representative Bloch.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And on that point, I'm just, you know, at several times as we were hearing the bills and considering things, I raised the issue of treating people who are doing home and community-based services differently, whether they, on whether or not they're serving people who are on elderly waiver or versus if they're on alternative care, let alone any of the other waivers. And I'm wondering if you have how you've resolved that in this bill. There was a number of bills that had that provision, and then here it's you've got a lot of lines here, and I'm trying to see. I don't even know if elderly waiver is in all of these lines on this item under 237, but just trying to understand, or will the nursing home and EW workers get their increase in 16, and then the other home and community-based workers get their increase in 17, and is it this, you know, how do they relate together? If you could walk us through that, or Mr. Berg, or someone who knows how these pieces fit.
Yeah. Representative Loeffler, I think I'm going to have Representative Schumacher take part of that. I would have Representative Hamilton walk through it since it's his bill, but he had to leave. So we can probably walk through part of that for the care portion. Representative Schumacher, can you grab on at least the first half of that one?
Mr. Chair, Representative Loeffler, it looks to me like everything is what happened in the same year for the waiver portions. I know we had the conversation with the nursing home rates before and what happens with the elderly waiver portion in that, and really all that's being dealt with in House File 316, which is on the next page of the spreadsheet, is establishing the caps for that program. What the 5% is doing is actually providing rate increases for that program, or for all of the programs in the waivered services.
And Mr. Berg, I don't know if you could, we obviously would have liked to have gone further with that. Well, we wanted at least a one-time 5, which we put in the second half of the biennium. Could you talk, Mr. Berg, just a little bit about how that fits into our spreadsheet and how we're funding that? Obviously, we would like to have gone further with that one-time 5, but that's what we're able to do in the bill, and hopefully we'll hang on to that.
Mr. Chair, members, I guess I'm not sure how to approach that. I mean, it is a $90 million cost one time in the biennium. As you noted, Representative Hamilton's bill was an aggressive ask that was, if I recall correctly, a total of almost $300 million for the original bill and very substantial tails cost. So this was a number which fit within our target, I would say, is the answer to that. And I think on the answer, the other one of the timing of the two, this applies to fiscal 2017, and I believe in 316 we established a new rate year that starts on January 1st. So there's, I believe, a six-month lag between the two, but half of it at least runs concurrently.
Okay. Mr. Williams, I think, has come to the table who can explain basically how this is going to work. But obviously, any time you build in a rate increase and you start it out in your biennium, you're gonna it's not a linear growth, so that you're 5 and then you're 5 plus 5 and moving it forward. So that's how that you go from a 90 million to a 270 very quickly within just the scale of the biennium. But we wanted to start that out and hopefully would be able to continue out that obviously into the future. We also have tails issues that we want to try to control, and that's why the appropriation was made as a one-time, but certainly not as a policy directive to future legislatures. And Mr. Williams, I don't know if you can amplify on that at all.
Mr. Chair and Representative Loeffler, I'm less familiar with the details of the disability programs. One thing I can say is that so the part of the bill that sort of relates to Representative Schumacher's House File 316, and that's in Article 5, deals only with the elderly waiver programs, and that increases the monthly caps rather than the rates. So it's my understanding that the disability service increases to the rates, whereas the part of the bill in the House Files 316 article is more about the monthly caps.
Representative Loeffler.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair, and if we can just get it clarified in terms of how these two populations will, what the amounts will be, because I do think there was a provision under customized living, at least in the last version we saw of House File 316, that said that I thought had a higher of one or the other rates, and I thought it was beyond the cap. But if we can just, you know, see if there's going to be any differences. And I think there were a couple other bills that had a distinction that accommodated a difference between waivers. And I just feel like we need to be conscious if we're going to treat one set of waivers differently than another. We need to be aware of that, because otherwise we're going to end up just like we are right now, where the nursing home staff saying we can't compete with the hospitals, and then we're going to get the home care agencies who work with the kids saying we can't compete with the ones that compete with that serve the adults. And we just, you know, need to make sure we're not creating that kind of tumbleweed that keeps coming back here.
Thank you,
Mr.
Representative
Chair.
I'm sorry.
I think Mr. Williams had a little follow up for.
I'm sorry, Mr. Williams.
The only thing I was going to say is the language that's in Article 5 of the bill is the same as that was in House File 316, with one small change to the sort of compromise language between the unions and the providers. So to the extent that you saw that change earlier, that should be reflected in the article as it's presented here. And I can follow up with you further offline about some of the other issues that you raised.
Okay. Thank you. Thank
you. Representative Mack.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just had the chance to have a little bit of a conversation about the MAEPD premiums issues, and I've spoken with the advocates, including Ann Henry from the Disability Law Center. And just for clarification, the changes that were passed in 2011 went into effect last October of 2014, and that's what I thought. I knew last October was kind of a key part in the timeline. And so the bill in front of us would actually bring those premiums back down to what was being paid, and basically what the advocates were asking for to kind of alleviate some of that pressure. And that would go into effect on July 1st. So I just wanted to bring that clarity.
Thanks for checking that out. That was my memory as well, was that they got a rate hit already. But thanks for checking that out. All right. Other questions? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to go back to Minnesota Care, which is of considerable importance in this bill. And I haven't had a chance to read through the bill yet. That's my weekend work. But I understand that there are some policy laid out here that has to do with the replacement for Minnesota Care that's in the bill, that we didn't hear that in the committee. And I wonder if you could talk us through that so that we, this is a pretty significant change.
Okay.
And we haven't heard it. So
sure. Can you give us what page you're on?
I understand it's Article 2, Section 1.
Article 2, Section 1. Mr. Chun, can you just walk through the article a little bit, and I can answer any policy Sure. Goals for what we're trying to do there.
Mr. Chair and Representative Liebling, the Article 2, the Minnesota CARE article, a lot of that language is what was in Representative Dean's House File 1665. In other words, the Minnesota CARE, you know, repeal language is the same, and the date is the same. The moving up of the provider tax, that would be new to this article. But I believe you're talking about the language that replaces what was called the Minnesota CARE 2 program in House File 1665. What this Delete Everything Amendment has that replaces that is a state tax credit. So the first section for that is Section 1 on page 47. And this is just some language saying that, and I'll go over the tax credit language in a later section, but Section 1 is saying that when that health care providers are to provide a premium advance to qualified individuals equal to the amount of the tax credit. And qualified individuals are defined in the bill as persons who would have met the income standards for the Minnesota CARE, you know, program under the prior law. So the intent of Section 1 is just to make the monthly premium more affordable for the enrollee by getting a premium advance from the health plan. Then when the enrollee gets their tax credit at the end of the tax year, they're obligated to pay that amount, pay the premium advance back to the health plan based on their, you know, the money they receive from the tax credit. The actual tax credit language is then on page 61, section 18. And the way this is designed is it's intended to provide two different levels of a tax credit, sort of based on a sliding scale. This language is on the top of page 62. You know, an amount for persons with incomes not exceeding 150% of poverty, and then another, a different amount of tax credit for persons with incomes between 150 and 200% of poverty. And the language specifying the amount of the tax credit, it's on page 62, lines 7 through 9. So there's a blank that needs to be filled in that sets the amount of the money available for the tax credit.
So,
Representative Liebling.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chun. I'm kind of surprised to see this here because just this morning or recently in Ways and Means, I think yesterday there was a discussion about the fact that there were some tax provisions in the transportation bill and there was quite some consternation, and that ended up being taken out so that it could be carried in the tax bill. And this is, I'm sure that you might have been there for that conversation, and I'm just wondering if this bill then is going to go to the tax committee with this portion, or where
that
this
portion
and where
will
the
travel in the tax bill. That's my intention.
Okay, Mr. Chair. So it's additionally in the tax bill, or?
I believe it will be separated out in Ways and Means and go to the tax committee.
Okay. And
that's the way that I'm planning.
Okay. And, Mr. Chair, where is the cost going to be carried? Will that be in the tax bill as well? And will
yes.
we? And then when will we? You know, it's I guess as a chair, it's great to get a cost out of your bill and into somebody else's, but for purposes, it's all tax money, and I'd like to know what that cost is so we can understand what we're doing here with this program.
Right, and Representative Liebling, that's been the piece that we're, you know, the Minnesota incentive that we've talked about, where we said, well, if people do go from the BHP into the onto the exchange, and they get a federal benefit from that and cost sharing, federal tax incentive at the point of contact. We also want to provide a Minnesota base to help them buy up a metal level. That will be carried. That we've not put that in our bill because we've not been authorized from headquarters to do that, but been working with Representative Knobloch, and we're going to be, I think, doing that. We're going to do it today. I think we're going to do it on Monday.
So, Mr. Chair, when this bill comes to Ways and Means, we'll have all that available then, I guess.
Yes.
Okay.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And on that, we're going to be asked before it goes to Ways and Means to vote on this. And so, and this is a major portion, a major huge policy change. And we're going to be asked to vote on it without having the replacement model and what the amount of the state, what the state contribution would do and how affordable that might be to current Minnesota care enrollees. We're not going to have that detail, and we'll advance the bill with some blanks in it to Ways and Means.
Well, actually, that portion will be carried in the tax bill. I wanted to put it in here so that we understand what the policy implications of that are for moving forward. That's the intent from this bill moving forward. That's a tax provision for the tax bill, but I did want to make people aware of that, understand that that policy that will affect our bill, but it's going to be carried in the tax bill.
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't care which bill it's carried in so much as that we understand the health policy and the impact on people's real lives and whether they can afford care or not care. And affording care is different than just affording insurance, because a lot of people have insurance that they cannot afford to get care because they can't pay for the deductible. Now, we have good providers, both hospitals and mental health clinics, and you know that some that will take patients even if they don't have the money to pay the deductible up front, but that's not true everywhere. I'm hearing from my FQHCs, the sliding fee, no-cost clinics that were really designed for the uninsured are getting overwhelmed with people with high deductible policies who say, I can't pay for the visit with my normal practitioner because I don't have that. My insurance doesn't cover it until I've paid $1,000 or $5,000 or whatever their deductible is. And so we really do need some more flesh on this bones to understand why we'd give up a program that we know is affordable to 100,000 people who are depending on it to a bill that isn't. And it seems to me that the Health and Human Services Committee is in a better position to judge whether this is a better replacement than Minnesota Care has been, or at least it will minimally meet people's needs without it going to the Tax Committee, where I think it's Representative McDonald and I are the only crossover. And so I do think we need you to accelerate as fast as you can that information. But the other thing is the mechanism by which people would pay their premiums. In the federal program, the federal premium tax credits reduce your premium right away from month one. And you don't have to pay back anything. This one implies that, well, we're going to, you know, once you get your refund, you're going to owe this big chunk of money, which, you know, for poor people, it's really hard. But it looks to me like this April 15th is a you-must-pay date for the previous year. Can you tell me how that works?
Yep. That's not the intent, Representative Loeffler. And I think, let's see, who drafted that portion? Is that you, Randy?
Mr. Michael.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We were both together. Can you explain probably better than I how the tax portion of that will work and how the flow will work, Mr. Chun?
Mr. Chair, Representative Loeffler, the individual receiving the tax credit, you know, would be required under this bill to pay back the amount to the health plan. But they do receive on a monthly basis from the health plans what's called in this bill a premium advance, which would have the effect of reducing the person's premium, you know, for each month. And then, as outlined in the bill, the person would apply, you know, would receive the tax credit as part of, you know, filing their taxes, and when they receive the tax credit, then that amount would be paid by the individual to the health plan that had provided the premium advances during the past coverage year. So there's a lag. So in a sense, the health carrier is, in a sense, fronting a premium reduction, and the health plan is paid back out of the tax credit, you know, at the start of the next year.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's exactly how I was reading lines 49.5, and it feels to me like asking someone who makes $8 an hour, who probably gets the working family tax credit, so they're used to getting a large refund from their income taxes, to pay the health carrier the full amount of the premium advance by April 15th of the following year, for which the premium advance was provided. It just feels like we're going to create a lot of problems with unpaid bills for the health plans and problems in the lives of people here. So, but we'll work on that in tax committee and here. So, but just wanted to understand the mechanism.
Yeah, I think you might be switching the person in the where the money's going, but we'll try to get a better explanation by Mr. Michael for Monday of just exactly how that mechanism works, because it is complicated. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Going to the spreadsheet, we've got on 653, we've got a couple of pieces there that have to do with federal compliance for Minnesota Care, federal basic health program compliance, and healthcare federal compliance. I'm not sure what that second piece was, but the piece that has to do with Minnesota Care, I'm wondering why we're doing federal compliance when your bill is getting rid of the program.
That's one of those, Mr. Chun, you want to grab that one, please?
Mr. Chair and Mr. Liebling, the bill would, you know, eliminate the Minnesota Care program beginning January 1 of 2016. However, there is the interim period, you know, after the bill is passed, during which the Minnesota Care as a basic health program would probably need to comply with these federal requirements. So that's why the relevant language from the governor's HHS bill was put into this bill. I think it's worth pursuing or discussing with the Department of Human Services staff whether or not if the federal government knows that the Minnesota Care program will be eliminated in, say, a six-month period, whether or not they would enforce these requirements. But I think to be safe, I think Representative Deem chose to put that language in so we would be in compliance.
So, Mr. Chair and Mr. Chun, so are those kind of one-time things that we need to do to comply? Because it's curious to me that the costs are the same as in the governor's budget, you know, unless they're kind of one time, or maybe Mr. Berg could address this.
Mr. Berg.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, something that I noticed as I was running through the spreadsheet here is that, as Mr. Chun said, we included this because there is a period in the budget period where they will be needed. But it occurred to me that under the bill, we certainly don't need to fund these items in the tails. And the issue of whether there would be any cost in fiscal 17 is a good one. So certainly this item will reduce in cost by a couple of hundred thousand, maybe 300,000.
And so, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lieber.
So I just saved you some money. Probably.
Thank you.
Maybe I could spend it on something else. another question that I have that's kind of related to all of this is that I noticed that you have put into the bill several different provisions that would seem to conflict with each other. I think we have House File 5 in here with Representative Mack's bill, which takes funding, and I haven't read the actual language that is in the omnibus bill, so I'm not sure if you'll tell me, I guess, if there are only parts of it in there or if it's different, but that bill makes various fixes to MNSURE, and also is the one that allows people to get the premium tax credits off of the exchange. Then we've got the repeal of MNSURE. And then, the MNSURE repeal, where we're going to the federal exchange. So you've got both of those things going on. And then you've got Minnesota Care, which under your Minnesota Care program puts people onto MNSURE. So we've got putting people who are not currently buying on the exchange. Well, actually, they are using the exchange now to enroll in Minnesota Care. But so that program goes away. At the same time, we're fixing it. And I'm just, it's kind of not really clear what you're actually doing in this bill with regard to these two important issues.
Sure. Well, I think the Pioneer Press this morning, if you picked it up, kind of covers it. And I thought did a pretty good job of describing some of the debate that we're having about, you know, 49 other states don't do this, and we do this, and we have essentially three programs for low-income Minnesotans. We've got Medicaid, Minnesota Care, and the Health Insurance Exchange. And the all the other states have two, which is Medicaid and the Health Insurance Exchange. So we've got three programs that we have, and the MNsure, we will find out, and the bill is dependent upon this, where we're going to be relative to other states with regard to tax benefits. If we are not getting any tax benefits for having a state-based exchange, I think we have to have very good reason for keeping it. What we have looked at is the long-term financial viability of Minnesota Care. We, I think, can all agree is not paid for into the future. So we are looking at trying to find something that low-income Minnesotans can depend on for many years to go out and get health insurance and get it paid for. So we're trying to do that with two programs rather than three, just like the other 49 states, in a way that is paid for and works long term. So that's where we're trying to head, Representative Leland.
Well, Mr. Chair, so essentially what I sort of hear you saying is that you're just kind of keeping your options open here, which I guess is one way to look at it. I would just what you said about waiting to find out, I forget how you exactly put it, but whether it's worthwhile, whether we're getting premium tax credits for our state-based exchange. I think the question before the Supreme Court is whether you get them if you don't have a state-based exchange. There's no question that we get them with the state-based exchange, so I think that's kind of already decided. But I just wanted to kind of confirm my understanding. It looks like what you're doing in this bill is, instead of making policy choices and moving forward with them, you're kind of waiting to see what, you know, what sticks, I guess. At least that's kind of how I'm understanding what you're doing here with these conflicting policy directions, and I guess you're kind of framing it as we need to have a discussion, but I would say that in the legislature, you know, you put forward your policy, and you have a discussion, and when you come out with an omnibus bill, you're saying, here's my policy, and I'm kind of not seeing that in this bill. It kind of seems to me that discussion is being kicked down the road a ways, and you know, it's not, I don't think we're intending today to debate these policies, and I'm certainly, it's not my intention to do that, but I think when we talk about, oh, how we've got something that isn't, the others don't have, and that somehow that means we shouldn't have it, I think we all acknowledge and have for years that Minnesota is a leader in healthcare. We have an extraordinary health industry in this state. It's a large, important part of our economy, not to mention part of our success as a state with our health of our people, and hopefully the improving health and of our groups who haven't fully benefited from that. And so I don't know why suddenly we would want to model ourselves after states who have actually damaged themselves pretty badly by not being willing to expand medical assist or Medicaid, and perhaps, I mean, we certainly can debate whether we should have Minnesota Care in the form that it's in, but I'm not really seeing the courage of anybody's convictions in this bill so far.
Well, Representative Liebling, what I think the conflict that we have in our current budget is that we don't pay for what we currently have. We've got a system that was designed for something from 1994 that we no longer have, with a healthcare access fund to collect premiums that are going to go away. And I think we all can understand that that's not paid for, and that's the conflict that I think we really need to have. And frankly, Representative Liebling, we can't wait another biennium to have that discussion until we're in another deficit situation, or the health care access fund is several hundred million dollars in deficit, as it will be if we continue to move forward without changes. So we're going to have that debate, and we're going to have it pretty quick. Representative Lane.
Hi, as I was just looking, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just looking at page 9 on the increased dental rates. Seems like a good idea in some places, but the numbers are interesting. So I'm just wondering, where was there a fiscal note with this? Where did these costs come from?
Yeah, we're just taking a position in the bill right now. We're waiting on the costs to come back. It's one of the areas that we still have an asterisk from with the outstanding fiscal notes, but it's just to take a position. And I just might add that folks have been working very hard on this issue, both in the House, Representative Zerwas, Senator Rosen, and others, in a very frustrating session this year. We've got a couple of positions in the bill with Representative Zerwas. We want to move forward as best we can, but that's one of the areas that we're waiting back on, and we'll continue to work on that. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I noticed we skipped a lot of pages that were the governor's recommendations, and I know no committee ever totally just... whether you or even know the same party buys all the recommendations, but there seemed to be a particular area in which almost nothing of the governor's was even attempted, and that was in the state-operated services, where we had a number of hearings about the fact that we have court orders, we have conditional licenses, we have workers who are at risk. In fact, in the deficiency bill, we tried to address some of those things because we felt it was a serious enough occasion that I think those bills passed unanimously or close to unanimously. And I thought there was some pretty compelling stories about how we're really letting down the people who have been committed to our care. And can you tell us a little bit about whether or not you seriously reviewed those, why you didn't find any that we needed to step up to, even though we're under court supervision and a lot of public scrutiny on this?
Sure, Representative Loeffler. We did hear quite a bit of testimony, both in policy, ways and means, and I'm trying to think if we heard it in this committee or not, from some of the facilities. And frankly, I think there's, from the opinion of many House members that I've talked to, particularly with the St. Peter facility, when we hear from the people who are working there directly, we're hearing kind of one story, and then we're seeing another story on the budget lines. And I'm not really satisfied, and I know a lot of the other members are not satisfied that that we know enough yet about what the needs are. And the deficiency bill of $10.6 million for St. Peter was a significant one-time expenditure. But that's something that the governor has taken a position on, and certainly it doesn't mean that we don't... recognize that there are significant issues there, but also I think that that's something that we want to look at closer from the client's perspective, but also from the worker's perspective moving forward, that there's a lot of issues, and I think specifically at St. Peter that the policy committee I'm sure will be looking at again next year as well.
Well, Mr. Chair, I always think we need due diligence, but we have also heard from how the system is just totally backlogged. Our hospitals, you know, can't get people in who are in crisis, and they aren't really designed to serve. We've heard from sheriff departments who are sending people, you know, five-hour drives each way to try and get someone into a care facility. We've got counties financially penalized and unable because they can't get people out because there isn't anything to move them to. And it feels like this budget should in some way address that backlog, because it's not just affecting the state operation, it's affecting our hospitals, our local law enforcement. I mean, it's having a really, damaging, I think, effect on our whole care system, let alone for that poor person who's in crisis, who's shipped to someplace, 5 hours away from their family. It feels like that was one of the big things that was just sort of, we were expected to help figure out, and it was pretty compelling testimony. And are there portions of your budget that start us down that road besides the pilot in Becker?
Sure. Representative Baker's bills, I think, do that, as well as the governor closes Wilmer. We keep Wilmer open. The governor closes Fergus. We keep Fergus open. I think that we want to maintain the access in those areas. Those are two decisions that we made that were different from the governor, that might reflect different priorities going into conference committee moving forward. But we understand that that's a significant issue that we need to deal with the counties. But from when you opened your statement, I think you referred directly to St. Peter, and I think I'd put that in a little bit of a different category.
I think it's state-operated services, which can be a whole continuum.
But I would also say that we do, I think, have a significant position for mental health, which we also wanted to reflect the committee's priority moving forward. And the crisis team interventions, which was, I think, a priority that we were able to carry through to the bill, that I hope we're able to carry through with conference, because I think that's a significant priority for mental health providers. I'm sure we'll hear from them on Monday, and I'm sure that that's what they will likely say.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And then on line 2966, the State Quality Council under the Ombudsman for Mental Health and Developmental Disabilities, I didn't see, it looked like the ombudsperson's offices, both that and for families, are really are not having their increasing demands met. I understand that you added some for one area in the State Council to help people comply with ADA, but can this is sort of the backstop for the clients that are stuck in the loops we just talked about?
Yep, my door was ajar today, and the ombudsperson found a way in to relay some of these very
She's a good
concerns.
Advocate for clients.
That's why we like her.
I guess her job, right? And so did relay a lot of those concerns, and I think they are legitimate concerns. We'll certainly take those into consideration.
And then, Mr. Chair, if I might just continue, if I don't see any other hands right now, is the Statewide Health Improvement Program. You've commented many times, as have others in your caucus, about the need for us to get healthcare costs under control. This one has gotten some really good research evaluation, as well as national acclaim for being one of the best ways to reduce obesity rates, which are a major driver of our healthcare costs, and have proven to be, I think, not only very locally tailored, but also all based on evidence-based practices, and have shown some pretty impressive outcomes, of which we heard no testimony against this program, and I was quite surprised to see this zeroed out, which is a major initiative in prevention across our entire state. Can you talk about that?
Representative Liebling, we've got a big target that we have to hit, and certainly understand the good things that they do, but also recognize that our number one priority within our target was vulnerable Minnesotans and direct care. So I guess that would reflect that, and certainly if we had more dollars, I'm sure that it would be included at least in some portion. And I also note that it is carried in the governor's bill, and likely will be carried in the Senate bill as well.
And Mr. Chair, on vulnerable populations, I I know there's some money for child protection, but I did not see the money to implement the bill that we have already passed into law. Is that correct?
Which bill are you referring to?
The bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's the first bill coming out of the Interagency Governor's Task Force on Child Protection that Representative Kreisha is a House representative on. He carried a bill early on, and we changed the law to say that the best interest of the child, we established some requirements for counties in terms of a much more immediate response and a much more in-depth response, as I recall. And the estimate of that, as I understand it, was $52 million. In order to staff up. This is kind of one of the legacies that came back to bite us, in that when we as a state disinvested in the child welfare funding that the state used to provide to counties, we saw the caseloads in child protection in some counties, I was told it was three times what the recommended national average was. And so that's part of why we started seeing, unfortunately, kids in some really terrible situations, some of whom died, and which is why the governor set up that task force to figure out why are kids being reported and the right action isn't being taken. Mm-hmm. And my recollection is that it's a $52 million part recommended by that task force to meet those minimal response needs. I think there's been discussion of other money for the follow-through to get them therapeutic, you know, the kids the kind of therapy and support that they need to recover from what they've been exposed to. But the $52 million was to fulfill those mandates so that we make sure that every call in, whether it's from a school, from a child care provider, from a doctor, gets responded to.
Representative Loeffler, I'm looking at page 4 of the spreadsheet, line 105, House File 191, Kreisha. Those are the levels that Representative Kreisha has requested and feels comfortable with moving forward. I don't see that the 52 funded anywhere, either on the governor's spreadsheet or elsewhere, but maybe that's a question that we can address for you over the weekend. But I'm quite sure that that's included within Representative Kreisha's numbers, because I know he's probably more familiar with all of that work than any of us are, and those are the numbers that he's comfortable with.
Okay. And the other area that I didn't see an appropriation in, but I thought it might be in the net, is on the eligibility verification. The fiscal note said that the counties would need some addition. I think the fiscal note said $5 million at the lower level of activity in order for this to be effective. And is that appropriated here to the counties?
Let me check with Ms. Aves. She's probably more familiar with how those two interact. Ms. Aves?
Mr. Chair and Representative Loeffler, the fiscal note on Representative Kreisha's bill, House File 191, is the amount that's in the House position on the spreadsheet. The additional money, I believe, some of what you're referring to was in the governor's supplemental budget to provide, I think it was $22 million each year, the biennium, to help provide some grants to counties to help them pay for the costs they expected to be incurred by enhancing the child protection system.
Thank you.
All right. Liebling, Representative Liebling.
Mr. Chair, I have a question about on line 281 in the spreadsheet. There is a pharmacy price website, which is not something I recall us hearing as a bill, and it's a cost of $500,000 in 2016. So I'd like to know a little bit what that is and how you arrived at that $500,000 figure.
Oh, hold please. Okay. Representative Liebling, that was a mistake that you can blame on the chair of this committee. I had two bills that basically were shooting at the same thing, and I put in the wrong one in the stack, and I will have an author's amendment replacing that with the other one, which I will give you a copy of.
So, Mr. Chair, did we hear the other one, and does it have a different price?
It's very similar. It'll have the same cost.
But we did hear it?
No.
Okay. Well, so you'll, I take it then when you make the amendment, you'll explain the, and we'll hear the bill in some fashion?
Yes, Representative. That's correct. It's very similar. There are technical changes between the two and some differences, and I just, I thought we had included both of them, and I grabbed the wrong one. So, my mistake, Representative Liebling.
Okay.
And we will address okay. that in the next room. But I think right. you'll find that it's not controversial, and if it is, you can let me know at that time.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, it's kind of, you know, generally speaking, we at least have a hearing on the policy, and not so much so that we, the members, can know what it is, but so that the public has an opportunity to weigh in on it. So, you know, I hope that we'll have some opportunity for that in case the public should have any interest in that. So the other question I have, and maybe it's more for Mr. Berg, and I don't know if maybe it's asking you for more than you're prepared to give right now, but I wonder, do you have a total for the new spending in the bill?
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, I don't at this point.
Is that, Mr. Berg, is that something that you could get for the committee? Because this, obviously, this bill not only cuts out MinnesotaCare, takes those savings, uses them in the general fund, but there's a considerable amount of new spending in this bill that is also paid for by some of these big cuts that have been created. I'll keep my editorial comment on that for now, but and so there are lots of new savings, I guess. So finally, other members may have more questions, but Mr. Chair, and if this would be the appropriate time, I wanted to ask you about our process from here, because obviously we got a little thrown off schedule by the problems getting the fiscal note together and so on, and we had originally been told that tomorrow noon was the deadline for amendments, which I just wonder if that's still your plan and what the future might look like here in the next few days.
Yep. Tomorrow noon we'll have deadlines. We will post them tomorrow evening by 2. So we'll try to get those up as quickly as possible. And then on Monday, we are coming in at 12:30. And we're going to have public testimony, and then we'll have a break, and then we'll have markup. Right now, I think we've got 50, 60 people who have signed up to testify. So we'll move through that and try to take the public testimony and then have a break and then come back for amendments.
Well, Mr. Chair, I have a few concerns about that. First of all, I have a concern about having such a short deadline for amendments on an omnibus bill. I have to say I've never seen that kind of an aggressive timeline before. At least I don't recall that. And and doing that, having a deadline at noon on a Saturday, and in fact the rules of the committee, which I went and checked, do say that you know, there's a 24-hour deadline for amendments, 24 hours before, and this is 48 hours, not 24. So we do have that problem. And then, you know, for me in particular, having a noon deadline on a Saturday basically means that I have to choose between my religious obligations and my work obligations. So that is a problem, and not that I want a particular exemption, but just as an example, I think that's, there may certainly be others, who knows, maybe among our staff who have the same kinds of issues. So I think that that's really problematic, and both in the short time available for that and then you're giving yourself essentially 24 hours, 48 hours instead of 24 to have those in. The other piece that I'm concerned about is this aggressive schedule in terms of having public testimony and then markup right away, because essentially we are not able to take into consideration what the public might say in crafting any amendments to the bill. It's almost as though the public testimony is kind of irrelevant at that point in terms of the committee. Now, obviously, amendments can be offered later on the floor or in ways and means, but in terms of this committee being able to do anything with that testimony, it means we can't. So that's the problem that I have, and I realize that the committee is, your schedule isn't totally your own. So, you know, I do realize that you're in a bit of a box, but I don't know, you know, obviously this was a bit out of your control, but those are just my concerns. I think this is a very large, very complex bill, as HHS omnibus bills always are. And I think that the House GOP was kind of all about at least talking about transparency for the public. I think with something that has as much impact on people's lives and health as this bill does, that it really, we owe it to the public to let people weigh in and have that their input be meaningful. So I would just ask you to consider that and see if there's any way that you can move any of that so that we can have a more full discussion and more full opportunity. And you said there were how many people signed up? 60-some-odd signed up to testify?
Over 50.
Over 50. Well, it just shows how much interest there is in the public. And, you know, we have to assume that people are going to be telling us things that we need to hear. Some of those some members of this committee may decide should result in an amendment, and by the schedule that you've laid out, it will then be too late to draft one.
Representative, I would just point out that the bill, I think, was posted sometime on Thursday, we have had all of the bills, the major portions, have been heard and moved through the appropriate committees. We'll have the bill posted. Actually, 4 days before markup, which I think is a significant amount of time, and I realize we had some issues with the spreadsheet and fiscal note, significant fiscal note change from the department yesterday. But I think we left a day within that that we could flex, and we should have ample time. All day Monday, and we'll probably have a longer day on Monday than many of us would like, but I think we can fit it in within our schedule. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I do think there's, at least from my perspective, a couple things that have changed today that I did not fully was not aware of, and one was the expanding the what was the eligibility verification to all of the programs and to go after providers without us having really any information about that and how it would work, and the fact that we still will not have a really full and robust Minnesota Care 2, as you refer to it, before us. And so I think those are two areas that have gotten a lot of interest because they have big numbers associated with them and a lot of people whose business or lives are dependent on them. And so those are some really big things that I think we need to be thoughtful about and that, at least from my perspective, have continued to be mysterious. And yet they're a major component of your bill, a major component of your policy, bringing it forward. And I suspect we're going to hear from people in the testimony who may have some aspects of that they have concerns about that may influence what's going ahead. So while you're accurate that most of this is bills that we heard before, there are clearly some things that haven't. And we're just going to be, you know, we need to still get to some language concerns where it would be really helpful to have the staff highlight for us where the language or the policy has changed to fit your budget you know, so it's a change from what we heard in committee, and where there's a new language that wasn't heard in order to fit some of the things you've had to deal with, because I think it's 354 pages, and while I skim much of it, you know, we're usually doing our skimming late at night because of the schedules we have here, and I suspect, the public would appreciate knowing what's different, just, you know, us calling attention to those highlights.
Appreciate that. All right. Other questions? Okay. Well, I think we covered most of the sections, at least as... Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Allen.
The one issue that we haven't discussed is the last item on the last page, the Department of Commerce. Is that... It seems unusual to have to direct another agency that is as this expenditure or this. Is there a bill for this, or that's been heard by the committee? Was it jobs that has jurisdiction over commerce? So, and then because the amount to repurpose. Has there been any inquiries to whether that can even be done? And so is that something that seems to me that would be a matter to be heard in that committee and then make a determination as to whether even that's... Because I don't think there's a very good precedent, or isn't any really precedent for repurposing. Most states, I think, that I've read about are being denied requests. So just talk about that, address that.
Sure. I think Representative Mack can probably address that. That's her provision.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Allen. The provision you're referring to is House File 5 and the requested waiver for the federal government. And I don't know about the precedent of doing kind of what you're asking about, but this is kind of part of the challenge that MNSHR presents when it comes to trying to address some of these policy issues, is how the various departments kind of are interwoven within each other. And Department of Commerce, obviously, and the way the 1334 waivers are directed, it would have to be the Commissioner of Commerce who would go for that waiver and produce that waiver, and then we have the associated cost there. And so I understand that this is something we'll have to look at and get worked out in ways and means in terms of how that goes. But as far as your precedent, I'll have to look into that. But I would imagine to get this figured out in ways and means as this bill goes forward.
And Representative Allen, all of the MNSHR costs are carried in this bill. That's a provision that would likely be under the purview of Commerce. 5 was also heard in Commerce as well, and I don't know if you serve on that committee, but it was addressed, I believe, at that time. All right. Yeah, I think... okay. Maybe if we go 10 minutes. Why don't we take a 10-minute break, and then... we'll come back and we'll just do a very want to just procedurally walk through the language section so that everybody understands the sections that are in the bill and the new pieces, and we'll just have the researchers very quickly go through that. I would suggest that nobody actually go all the way upstairs and outside because it will make it very difficult to come back, but we'll just do about a 10-minute break. All right, we're going to pick it up again, and we're just going to walk through the bill sections with researchers. So if Randy, you want to grab the first sections, that would be great. Just kind of march through. And then we've tied back, I think, most of the controversial sections already, but I just want to make sure that everybody knows what's in the bill and see if we can catch anything before Monday if we need to do anything over the weekend. So, Mr. Chun.
All right, Mr. Chair and members, Article 1 is the health care article. Section 1 is from House File 850, Representative Liebling. This is one of the governor's recommendations related to third-party recovery. Sections 2 and 10 are from House File 1314, Representative Schumacher. This is language allowing the U of M Dental School residents to enroll as MA providers for purposes of electronic health record funding. Sections 3, 4, 11, and 12 are from House File 657, Representative Lohmer. This language would sort of expand the use of automated drug distribution systems and make it easier to bill MA for drugs that are distributed through these systems.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Walker.
Thank you. It's helpful to just to know where these are from, but I'm wondering if, as we go through, if we could just have the House researcher just say, this part was changed to fit the dollars, or this part, you know, just so we know sure. if we can highlight the things that might have changed.
All right. Okay. I think to the extent sure. that's on the tip of your tongue.
Right. And Representative Loeffler, for these sections that I've just gone over, there have been sort of no changes from the bills as heard, mm-hmm. I guess. Then House Section 5, this is Representative Dean's House File 2140 that he mentioned is going to be replaced in the author's amendment. House Files 6, Section 6, 7, and 22 are from House File 1853, Representative Backer. These are the governor's recommendations related to critical access hospital payment methodology and disproportionate share hospital payments. Section 8 is from House File 559, Representative Zervas. And this is a modification. In place of the bill itself, this or the other provisions in the bill, this just would include increase the spend down standard for persons who are aged, blind, or disabled from 75% to 80% of the poverty guidelines. Section 9 is the governor's recommendation. This is related to the availability of assets. Then Section 13, another governor's recommendation to expand the use of medication therapy management. Sections 14, 25, and 26 are from House File 1053, Representative Zervas, and these modify reimbursement provisions related to durable medical equipment and other items. Sections 15 and 16 are governor's recommendations dealing with medical assistance, federal compliance, mainly dealing with cost sharing, and also billing under the EPSDT program. Then section 17 through 21, section 27, and section 29 are from House File 2038, Representative Dean. And these deal with the regulation and reporting of managed care administrative costs. Then sections 23, 25, and 26 are from House File 1634, Representative Baker, and these provisions increase Gillette outpatient payment rates and payment rates for other services. Section 24 is from House File 1151, Representative Zervas. This was the dental bill, and this is a modification of the bill. It provides an across-the-board 5% increase in dental rates. Section 28 is not from legislation, so it's new to this bill. This would require DHS to negotiate reductions in managed care administrative costs. Section 30, also a new provision. It delays certain 2017 capitation payments for PMAP and special needs basic care. Section 31 is from House File 1936, Representative Pearson. This is the state program eligibility audits. It's been modified from the bill as heard in committee to expand the scope of audits to non-healthcare programs and to require performance-based vendor financing, and also to require the vendor to pay the state and county costs out of the vendor savings. And Section 32, the last section, is new. It requires DHS to issue an RFP to identify and reject improper MA billing.
questions about Article 1? All right, Minnesota Care, Article 2.
Okay. Members, Article 2 is the Minnesota Care article. Section 1 is the provision discussed earlier requiring health carriers to provide advanced premium advances, and this language is from House File 2211 of Representative Dean, which I believe is in the Tax Committee. Sections 2 and 3 are from House File 1665, Representative Dean. These are changes that are conform to the repeal of the Minnesota Care program. Sections 4 through 15 of this article are from House File 850, so these are governor's recommendations related to Minnesota Care federal compliance. Sections 16 to 17 from House File 1665, these are more conforming changes to the Minnesota Care repeal. Then Section 18 from House File 2211, this sets up the state tax credit for MinSure premium payments. Section 19, also from House File 2211, this moves up the repeal date of the Minnesota Care provider tax. Section 20 is from House File 1665. It's a revisor's instruction related to Minnesota Care repeal. And then the last section itself, Section 21, is from House File 1665, and this is the language actually repealing the Minnesota Care basic health care program effective January 1st of 2016.
All right. Ms. Olson, you wanted to grab 3?
Mr. Chair and members, Article 3 relates to MinSure. Sections 1 to 17 and 21 to 23 are from Representative Max, House File 5, which makes changes to MinSure. And sections 18 to 20 are from House File 1874, which was Representative Quam's bill on consumer assistant background checks. And sections 24 to 26 are from Chair Dean's House File 1664, which creates a federally facilitated exchange contingent upon a Supreme Court ruling this summer.
Ms. Pinelli, you want to tackle Article 4, please?
Mr. Chair, members, Article 4 is the continuing care article. Section 1 and Sections 32 to 39 establish ABLE accounts. This is from House File 161, Representative Zerwas's bill. Sections 2 and 3 are from House File 1272, Representative Mack's bill on settlement agreements. Section 4 to 20 and Section 28 are from House File 980, Representative Halverson's bill on home and community-based services standards. Section 21 is a modified version of House File 1640, Representative Peterson's bill related to TEFRA parental fees. Section 22 is from House File 1606, Representative Dean's bill to eliminate certain transfer authority of the Commissioner of Human Services. Sections 23 and 24 are from Representative Keel's House File 278. They are for Alzheimer's local and regional grants. Section 25 is from House File 560. It's Representative Albright's bill to reduce premiums for MAEPD. Sections 26 and 27 are from Representative Hamilton's bill, House File 975, related to the State Quality Council. Sections 29, 31, and 41 is a modification of House File 564, Representative Hamilton's 5% rate increase bill for home and community-based providers. Section 30 is from House File 1012, Representative Dean's bill related to home and community-based settings. Section 40 is from House File 1790, Representative Max CDCS bill, and this is a modified version of that bill. And section 42 is from House File 1122. It's a modified version of Representative Zerwas's pediatric home care bill.
Questions? And section 5.
Mr. Chair and members, Article 5 is the Nursing Home Payment Reform and Workforce Development Article. Sections 1 and 8 are from House File 614, Representative Baker's Long-Term Care Workforce Development Bill. These two sections are related to home and community-based loan forgiveness and nursing facility scholarships. Section 2 is from House File 515, Representative Lewick's bill related to nursing facility bed moratorium. Sections 3 to 7, 9, and 11 to 41 are Representative Schumacher's House File 316, the nursing facility payment reform bill. And Section 10 is from House File 1221, Representative Zerwas's bill related to nursing facility construction projects.
All right. And Article 6.
Mr. Chair and members, Article 6 is the public health and health care delivery article. Sections 1 to 3 and Section 16 are from House File 1246, which was Representative Mack's bill dealing with telemedicine delivery. Section 4 is a modified version of Representative Keel's House File 1447, and it takes the primary care residency grants portion of that bill. Section 5 is Representative Kelly's House File 445, dealing with discharge notices to patients from hospitals. Section 6 is from House File 1604, which was Representative Zerwas's bill relating to epinephrine auto-injectors. Section 7 is from House File 507, that is Representative Aaron Murphy's bill with the definition of residential hospice facilities. Sections 8 to 10 and Sections 17 and 18 are from House File 261, which is a Representative Mack bill creating a community EMT licensure. Sections 11 and 12 are from House File 1047, Representative Whelan's Born Alive Infants Protection Act. Section 13 is House File 439, Representative Lohmer's Prenatal Trisomy Diagnosis Awareness Act. Section 14 is from House File 792, which is Representative Zerwas's Smile Healthy Minnesota 2016 grant program. And Section 15 is from House File 1960, Representative Pearson's definition of a lodging establishment.
All right, Ms. Aves, Article 7.
Yes. Mr. Chair and members, Article 7 is the Children and Family Services article. This article is primarily governor's language, all federal compliance related to changes in federal law, with the exceptions of Section 3, which is from Representative Will's House File 581, change to the Homeless Youth Act, Sections 33 to 34, Chair Dean's removal of the child support application fee, House File 1638, Sections 35 to 44 and Section 62 are from House File 191, Representative Cresha's Child Protection Bill, and Section 63 is House File 512, Representative Norton's Child Support Work Group.
Are you of Article 8?
Yes, I do.
All right.
Mr. Chair and members, Article 8 is the Chemical and Mental Health article. Section 1 and Sections 12 and 13 are from Representative Albright's House File 1062, Crisis Services. Sections 2 and 3 are from House File 1209, Representative Barrett's Suicide Prevention Provisions. Section 4 and Sections 8 and 9 are from House File 1611, Representative Backer's demonstration project, Excellence in Mental Health. Section 5 is House File 1653, Representative Baker's Psychiatric Residential Treatment Facility. Section 6 and 7, Representative Baker's House File 604, increasing the MA rates for chemical dependency providers. Sections 10 and 11 and 15 and 16 are House File 1063, Representative Baker's Peer Specialist Clubhouse Program and First Episode Psychosis or Manic Episode Programs. And Section 14 is Representative Hancock's House File 339, the grant to Beltrami County.
And we're up to Article 9, Ms. Ace.
This is the direct care and treatment article, Mr. Chair. Section 1 is Representative Detmer's House File 329 that would continue insurance coverage for state employees who are assaulted by patients at the commissioner's facility. Sections 2 and 3 are from Representative Hoppe's House File 1568, which requires reviews for individuals who have been committed as mentally ill and dangerous. Sections 4 and 5 are not bills that were included. They're to clarify issues in the spreadsheet and prohibit the commissioner from closing the care facility in Fergus Falls and the CABS facility in Wilmer.
All right. And 9 and 10. I think you have those sections as well.
Mr. Chair and members, Article 10 is withdrawal management programs. That's a provision in the governor's bill, House File 850, that establishes a licensure program for programs who provide medically based programs that provide detox services. And Article 11 is the health related licensing board's article. Sections 1 to 6 are Representative Zerwas's House File 1582, the body art bill. Section 7 and a repealer are an amendment offered by Representative Liebling to prohibit the boards from taking disciplinary action for non-payment of student loans. That was in Representative Albright's House File 1584. Sections 8 and 41 to 45 are from Representative Albright's bill from the licensing boards, clarifying their temporary immediate suspension process. Sections 9 to 21 are from House File 981, Representative Peterson's optometry bill. Sections 23 to 27 are from Representative Mack's social work bill, House File 960. Sections 28 to 33 are the governor's proposals in House File 850, modifying the fees for dentistry professionals. Sections 34 to 36 and Section 41 are from Representative Peterson's pharmacy bill, House File 1659. And the final three sections of this article, 37 to 40, are from the governor's proposal increasing the fees for pharmacy professionals.
Thank you, Ms. Aves. Ms. Finelli, can you grab Article 12, please?
Mr. Chair, Article 12 is the Public Assistance Simplification Article. This article is Representative Max House File 1443, the Public Assistance Simplification Bill.
All right. And let's see. Mr. Berg, we have nothing for 13. Ms. Olson, the appropriations, however you want to handle that. Walk through that would be great.
That's Mr. Chair and members, the appropriations article contains several House files that were heard in committee, and these, the ones that I'm going to list, are the House files that do not have accompanying statutory language that we just went over in an article, and a couple of them are on the spreadsheet only. So there are other riders associated with some of the House files that were just mentioned in other articles, but like I said, the House file numbers I'm about to mention are not included in any other article. So in the appropriations article only, there is House File 1843, Representative Smith's mobile food shelf bill, House File 1296, Representative Anderson's Eagle's Nest bill, House File 1061, Representative Miller's appropriation for Safe Harbor. House File 971, Representative Schumacher's Advanced Care Planning Bill. House File 346, Representative Hoppe's Poison Control Center's grant. House File 699, Representative Purcell's grant to the Leech Lake Ambulance Services. House File 339, Representative Hancock's grant to the Beltrami County Medical Center. House File 818, Representative Zerwas's grant to the Minnesota Stroke System. House File 1651, Representative Baker's opiate antagonist grants. House File 1341, Representative Pearson's deaf and hard of hearing grants. House File 1145, Representative Dean's chemical dependency grants. House File 576, Representative McDonald's FQHC funding grants. House File 1632, Representative Backer's bill on the Council on Disability. House File 1543, Representative Grunhagen's grant to Isaroon. House File 1258, Representative Franson's organ donation grants. And finally, House File 825, Representative Peterson's grants for Safe Place for Newborns.
All right. So those are appropriation only, no statute. Okay. Other questions? Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And just trying to figure out as we go forward, we don't have an omnibus policy bill, which we sometimes have had for housing some things that don't have fiscal implications, and it appears we pick up part of the governor's bill that have to do with monies, but I think there were some other policy provisions in there, and I've already heard the rumblings from the lobbying corps about people wanting to bring various pieces of policy in just to make sure it kind of matches up with the Senate discussion. I mean, what are your thoughts about how this process will evolve from now and going into conference when there may be things we haven't taken positions on?
Sure. The Senate is getting their bill shaped up, and the governor has his provisions out. We have our priorities delineated. And I think we've done a very good job of presenting the priorities of the committee and creating positions in the House, also reaching out to a lot of the stakeholders to present bills in language form, even if we can't get all of the requests that they wanted. And I think our members have done a good job of incorporating that, and the staff has done so as well in doing so. But always we are open to any amendments going into the upcoming committees and on the floor, and anything that we can do to strengthen our House position moving forward is greatly appreciated. Representative Liebling.
Well, Mr. Chair, I just want to once again really register my objection to the schedule, especially the designation of when amendments now have to be done, at which I think is really unfortunate. And you haven't explained why that is being done, why we're being required to get them in 48 hours ahead of when the bill will be marked up. But that and the fact that we are hearing from the public after the deadline for submitting our amendments, I think is really unfortunate. And I just want to really, on the record, register my strong objection to both of those things.
All right. Other comments? Monday, call of the chair. We are going to be in room 5 Monday, a little bit afternoon. So hope everyone enjoys the weekend, and we will see each other again very soon. Have a nice weekend, everybody. We're adjourned.